Dr. Michio Kaku is one of the most charismatic and visible figures in science today and is beloved by his extensive fan base of millions of readers and followers. A media mainstay as the national science contributor for CBS This Morning, he also hosts the radio programs Science Fantastic and Exploration and is the number one New York Times bestselling author of The Future of the Mind. His new book is The God Equation, The Quest for a Theory of Everything. It is a quick, succinct, and digestible book that explains all of physics from Newton to string theory as one epic journey. It is a great pleasure and an honor to welcome Dr. Michio Kaku to the roundtable this morning. What a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for letting me be on the show.
What do we mean when we're talking about the God equation, this idea of putting everything together?
Well, I first heard about the God equation when I was 8 years old. Everyone was talking about the fact that a great scientist had just died, and they ran a picture of his desk on the news with an unfinished book. The caption said, "This is the unfinished manuscript from the greatest scientist of our time." Well, I was shocked. I was stunned. Why couldn't he finish that book? What's so hard that the greatest scientist of our time couldn't finish it? Well, over the years, I went to the library, and I found out that this man's name was Albert Einstein. And that book, which mesmerized me, was to be the God equation. He wanted an equation no more than 1 inch long that would allow us to, quote, read the mind of God. It would unify all the laws of the universe into a single theory. Now, look at E equals mc squared. That theory is only half an inch long, and yet it unified matter and energy, and that's why the sun shines. That's why the stars light up at night. E equals mc squared. He wanted an equation like that, that would light up the universe, explain life, explain planets and stars and galaxies. You know, biology can be explained by the laws of chemistry. Chemistry can be explained by the laws of physics. Physics, in turn, can be explained by relativity, the theory of the very big, black holes and big bangs, and the theory of the very small, the quantum theory. But these two theories don't match together. We need a God equation to put these two last great theories together. It's hard to believe that God could have a left hand and a right hand that don't talk to each other. So that's where the God equation comes in. A single equation that allows you to summarize, well, everything in the universe. This is the equation that set into motion the Big Bang.
You write in the introduction that Stephen Hawking even gave a talk with the title, "Is the End in Sight for Theoretical Physics?" You talk in the book about how this theory will help explain and unravel the deepest mysteries of space and time, but you also talk about how real progress has stalled. Give us a sense of why we are in this holding pattern.
Well, we have the theory. The theory is called string theory. If you watch the Big Bang Theory on TV, you know that Sheldon actually worked on string theory.
Right.
But we're up against a brick wall. We have the theory. It seems to work. But how do you test it? That's the problem. We need a test. Now, just 2 weeks ago at Geneva, Switzerland, the Large Hadron Collider, physicists there announced they found a strange anomaly, something that cannot be explained using the usual standard model of particles. That could be a signal that we're on to a higher theory, that is string theory and a theory of everything. Also, dark matter is a big mystery. It's invisible, surrounds the galaxy, and is more plentiful than ordinary matter. But we want to capture it in the laboratory. We want to play with it, study it. We think that dark matter is the next octave of the string. That is, we are the lowest vibrations of tiny little vibrating strings. The next octave up is dark matter. If we can find dark matter in the laboratory, that could help to clinch the theory as well. So there are many experiments that are being devised now, but it'll take a few more years before some of these things are lofted into outer space and are become operational. So that's why the book was written, because in the coming decade, we're going to be able to, quote, test the theory of everything.
What are the limitations of string theory as you see them?
Well, the mathematics is incredible, and it has scared away a lot of physicists who are not that good in math. But to me, it's gorgeous. It's beautiful, because symmetry is the key to the unified field theory. Take a look at E equals MC squared. Why is it so powerful? It unifies M, matter, like the matter of the stars, and E, energy. Two very separate things are unified into one equation. Now, look at all the particles. We have hundreds of particles, neutrinos, electrons, hadrons, protons, neutrons. It goes on and on and on. In fact, J. Robert Oppenheimer, who built the atomic bomb, was so frustrated that physicists were drowning in subatomic particles that he said, quote, "The Nobel Prize in Physics should go to the physicist who does not discover a new particle this year." Well, now we think that all these particles can be summarized as music, just music. They're just different notes on a tiny vibrating string. So physics is the harmonies of vibrating strings. Chemistry is the melodies you can play on these vibrating strings. The universe is a symphony of strings. And then the mind of God, is cosmic music resonating through hyperspace.
Dr. Michio Kaku is our guest on the roundtable this morning, professor of theoretical physics at the City University of New York and author of the new book, The God Equation, The Quest for a Theory of Everything. You talk in the book that yes, you admit you have a stake in this, and you have because you've been working on string theory since 1968.
That's right. I like to look at it as somebody walking in the sands of Egypt and then tripping over a small pebble. You brush away the sand, and then you realize that it's actually the top of a pyramid. You start to brush away the tons and tons of sand. You find hieroglyphics, ancient writing, diagrams, pictures. It's an incredible structure. And now, finally, after decades of work, we're finally at the bottom. And we're about to open the door, the entrance to this theory. So that's what's so exciting, that we can finally begin to think about unraveling the final mystery of this gigantic pyramid that we've been excavating in the sand. So the theory is smarter than we are. We're actually, in some sense, working backwards. The theory was discovered by accident. By accident, we would never have discovered this theory systematically. It was by accident that we stumbled upon it. Mathematicians have been bowled away. In fact, if you want to win the Nobel Prize in mathematics, the Fields Medal, you sort of have to learn string theory. The string theory gives you new mathematics. So, of course, that's mathematics. We want experimental proof. That's coming, I think, in the coming years. And that's going to be so exciting. We will finally end this 2,000-year search for a single paradigm, a single theme, a single reason for the entire universe.
You know what fascinates me in reading this book is that you are brilliant. You know so much. And I just look at you and I think, my goodness, to have that intellect in mind. And yet, you are frustrated by what you still don't know.
Yes, well, the more we know, the more we know we don't know. But I like to look at it as a chess game, that after 2,000 years, we finally figured out how the pawns move. We finally figured out how the bishops and the knights move on the chess game. But once we get the God equation, we'll become grandmasters. We'll be masters of the rules of chess and then create new strategies and new developments. So I think in some sense, that's the destiny of humanity. The destiny of humanity is linked to this theory, because this theory will answer some of the deepest questions, even of science fiction. Is time travel possible? What lies on the other side of a black hole? What was there before the beginning, before the Big Bang? Are there gateways to other universes? Are there ways of traveling faster than the speed of light? All these things cannot be answered with the ordinary theory of physics. That's where string theory comes in. String theory actually will resolve the question about time travel, dimensional gateways, parallel universes. And it will finally answer the question that I get in my email. People want to know, if there are parallel universes, is Elvis Presley still alive in a parallel universe? Well, string theory will finally resolve that question.
Is it weird that we know what it can answer when we don't know what it is yet?
Yeah, but you see, we can see enough of the outlines of the theory that we can start to make statements. Now, I hope that a young listener to this program is so energized after hearing this interview that he goes out and finishes the whole theory. And I have a word of advice. This person should first tell me first. Tell me first about your discovery, and we'll publish together and win the Nobel Prize together.
What does a Nobel Prize mean to you?
Well, in some sense, not much, because some of the greatest work was done by individuals who never got the Nobel Prize. In fact, you can write a book about the fact that the wrong people got the Nobel Prize, and the people who actually did some of the pioneering work died too early, never got recognition. Very sad. But the Nobel Prize is a crude approximation to the great breakthroughs of the past 150 years.
Dr. Michio Kaku is our guest. The new book is The God Equation. I want to get back to Einstein for a second. You write in the book, Einstein, although he was one of the founders of the quantum theory, ironically would become the quantum's greatest adversary. He would unleash a barrage of criticisms against the quantum theory. Over the decades, the theory has met every experimental challenge and has given us a deluge of wondrous electrical appliances that fill up our lives and workplaces. However, his deep, subtle philosophical objections to it resonate even today. Talk a little bit about that resonance of his concern and skepticism.
Well, there are two great theories of physics. One is relativity, the theory of the black hole, Big Bang, space warps, the theory of the big. Then we have the theory of the small, that is, the quantum theory. This quantum theory gives us transistors, lasers, computers, the internet, this conversation is made possible because of the quantum theory. And the problem is, these two theories don't like each other. So Einstein helped to pioneer, of course, relativity. It was his creation, but he also was one of the founders of the quantum theory. But the quantum theory is based on probabilities. Einstein hated that. He thought that the world was like a clock, obeying his laws and Newtonian laws, no probabilities. You could know for certain when things happen. But the quantum theory comes along and says, no, you can't know for certain when things happen. And then it gets even stranger. It means that you can be in two places at the same time. And we see that with electrons. Electrons can be two places at the same time. And as many people have come up to me, they ask the question, is Elvis Presley still alive in another parallel universe? Well, if the quantum theory is correct, it means that in some sense, yes, that the king is belting out hits in another universe. Einstein hated this idea, but hey, get used to it. It worked.
You write in the book that Elvis aside for a moment, including this too, I guess, is that you say it is impossible to prove that unicorns don't exist. This means that 100 years from now, people will still be debating the existence of God and the meaning of the universe. So if those arguments are still going to go on, it does beg the question of, we go to all of this trouble then for what?
Well, look at it this way. Science is based on things that are testable, reproducible, and falsifiable. That's called science. Now, does that mean that it describes the entire universe? No. There could be things in the universe that are not testable, not falsifiable, not reproducible, but are real, okay? So science only goes so far. Science only goes to the realm of things that you can touch, feel, experiment with. But there are things that we cannot touch, like the sun. We know so much about the sun, but we've never been there. We can't test it. We can't touch it. We can't reproduce it. So why is it science? It's science because we understand the laws indirectly that generate the sun. Now, God, on the other hand, angels, miracles, they're not even like the sun. That is, there's no experiment that we can conceive of directly or indirectly. We can indirectly determine the nature of the sun, but a direct measurement of the sun is impossible. With God, we can do neither, direct or indirect. Now, that doesn't mean that God doesn't exist. Maybe he does. It's just that science is incapable of making the final decision.
You write in the book, the final equation of the universe is unique. There might be an infinite number of solutions of this master equation, giving us a landscape of solutions, but the equation itself is unique. How so?
Yeah, think of, for example, Newton's laws. Newton's laws of motion are unique. You can write it on a sheet of paper. But how many solutions of Newton's laws are there? An infinite number. You can have a falling apple. You can have a rocket ship. You can have a locomotive. All of them obey Newton's laws of motion. So how many solutions of Newton's laws of motion are there? Infinite number. Depends on your initial conditions. Do you have a train? Do you have a rocket? Do you have a runner? What are you studying? But the equation is unique. That, we think, is string theory. String theory is just one equation. But we think its solutions are many, many universes. Now, that's room for criticism now. Some people say that, well, if each solution of the string theory is a universe, and there are infinite number of universes, then how do we know which one is real? That's a problem. It depends on how you kick off the universe, just like it depends on Newton's laws of motion. You have to tell Newton, are you studying a rocket ship? Are you studying a pebble? Are you studying a star? Tell me how you start the calculation. So that's how I answer the question of people who say string theory is no good because it predicts many universes. Well, get used to it. So it is Newton's laws of motion.
You make a wonderful point at the conclusion of the book that I would like to talk with you about and ponder for a moment. And that is that if we do discover a complete theory, that it should in time be understandable in broad principle by everyone, not just a few scientists. That is such an important point to me, that instead of in this silo of scientific research that this comes out, that it be discussed, it be talked about, it be understood, and how we do that.
Yeah, well, you know, the universe turned out to be a lot simpler than we thought. The universe could have been ugly, it could have been random, it could have been chaotic, but the universe is gorgeous. And the laws can be put on just one sheet of paper. I mean, it didn't have to be that way. But on one sheet of paper, you can put down the theory of almost everything. Now, we want to get it down to one inch. We don't want to have all these thousands of equations on a sheet of paper. We want to get it down to one equation. And it didn't have to be that way, you know? The universe could have been totally chaotic. So Einstein looked at it the way that a young boy or a girl would look at entering a library. When you went to a library, you're surrounded by this treasure trove of knowledge. But, said Einstein, he was like a little boy who could only pick up the first book, first chapter, first few lines, and read them. But there was this huge book, books of libraries in front of him. That, I think, is the universe. The universe is just waiting for us to figure things out. So I think that's the destiny of humanity. The destiny of humanity is to become grandmasters of this chess game. This chess game to find the God equation, the rules of the game, and then to become grandmasters. I think that's part of our destiny.
When you think of our destiny, what do you think of as where you are in this and in your study and as your understanding and in your role as teacher to us of further understanding this?
Well, I think it's a continual process. And I think, well, some people come up to me and say, okay, professor, after everything is said and done, what's in it for me? What's the meaning of life for me? Tell me. And I tell them that it's too easy. It's too easy if somebody gives you the meaning of life. You have to struggle. You have to struggle to find that meaning. In other words, we create our own meaning of life. So what is the meaning of life? The meaning of life is to struggle to give yourself meaning. To have it given to you by some guru from a mountaintop defeats the whole purpose. The whole purpose is the process of struggling to attain an understanding of your destiny. So in some sense, you make your own meaning. You make your own destiny, and that is the meaning of life.
Through the course of our conversations a few times this morning, you have talked about the beauty of the universe, and you say in the book that the universe is remarkably beautiful, ordered, and a simple place. So as we conclude this morning, talk a little bit about that beauty, of how we can appreciate the beauty of this universe.
Well, if you talk to an artist about beauty, they would simply use words that talk about the aesthetics of beauty. But to a physicist, it's quite concrete. Beauty to a physicist is symmetry. The symmetry of a snowflake, the symmetry of a sphere. You rotate a snowflake, you rotate a sphere, and it turns into itself. That is the key to the universe. Because it means that any equation, like E equals MC squared, if you rotate E into M and M into E, the equation remains the same. And so, in other words, we're talking about symmetry being the key to the universe itself. So we think that at the beginning of time, at the Big Bang, the universe was like a crystal, beautiful, gorgeous, symmetrical. You could rotate it any way you want. Just like a diamond, it remains the same. But there was a crack, a small crack in this jewel at the beginning of time, causing it to shatter. And today, our job is to put all the pieces back together again. And we find that the further you go back in time, the fewer equations there are, the more simple things become, such that at the instant of creation, the universe itself is a jewel with a crack in it, but nonetheless perfection at the beginning of time. So beauty and symmetry, instead of being a luxury or an added-on factor, now become the central idea behind string theory and the theory of everything.
Dr. Michio Kaku's new book is The God Equation. He's professor of theoretical physics at the City University of New York and co-founder of String Field Theory. Dr. Kaku, it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. I thank you very much for spending time with us this morning.
Okay, thank you.
Be
great
well.
Honor.
Thank you very much, mm-hmm. And to you. Again, Dr. Michio Kaku's new book is The God Equation, The Quest for a Theory of Everything. The book is published by Doubleday. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.